And welcome back. We've talked in the past on this program about the colony of great horned owls in Forest Park. No one knows them better than amateur naturalist Mark Lenshaw. He's observing his 10th anniversary of studying the creatures and of conducting what he calls owl prowls, excursions in which he brings interested observers to the owl's habitat. Mark Lenshaw returns to this program to bring us up to date on his owl friends. Mark, nice to have you with us once again.
Thank you, Don, for having me back. Always an honor and pleasure.
Well, I called them a colony of great horned owls. Okay, I know there are flocks of birds. What do you call a bunch of owls when they're together?
That term doesn't come up that often because very few owls group together in anything more than a family. But a group of owls is called a parliament of owls.
Parliament.
And I have an embarrassing story about that, but you'll have to bring me back again for that story. But yes, a parliament of owls. But great horned owls, like many owls, do not group together in anything more than a family.
How many do we have out there in Forest Park right now?
In Forest Park, there are two pairs of great horned owls and probably two to three pairs of barred owls, not barn with an N, but barred, B-A-R-R-E-D. Mm-hmm. And there might be an eastern screech owl somewhere lurking around. I haven't seen an eastern screech owl, unfortunately, for over 10 years. But about 6 to 8, 8 to 12 owls in Forest Park.
Now, do we have separate parliaments or do we have one single parliament with all these this variety of owls all together?
Wouldn't even call it a parliament. No, not even a bicameral legislature. It's just separate individuals as well as a few pairs of each species as well.
Now, we should just mark that yesterday, I believe the 29th, marked your 10th anniversary, as I indicated in the introduction. 10th anniversary of since you got interested in them or since you've been conducting the owl prowls or what?
I really mark this date, the 29th of December. I call it my owliversary, as really that's the date I began to watch these great horned owls consistently, being able to find them more days than not. I first found them in late August, early September 2005, a day I wish I'd written down, but I did not. But on this day, December 29th, 2005, that's when I found the male owl, who I named Charles. And he was in a hollow in a cottonwood tree, and he began to stretch and groom and hoot, and he flew off. And I thought, that has to be one of his places. And I can't wait for tomorrow to come, and I'm going to come back here and see if he's there. And sure enough, he was.
And he was alone.
He was alone at the time, but right around then I began to see who I had already seen before, the female. She was nearby in another hollow of a cottonwood tree. What I didn't know at the time was that she was nesting.
And this would have been Sarah?
This would have been Sarah, and she had two owlets that year.
Well, there's a sad footnote, as I also indicated, concerning Sarah. Sarah has disappeared.
Sarah has died, unfortunately. In July, I found her in an unusual area in their territory, looking ill or injured, and she did not move from this particular spot for 36 hours. And this was July 18th through the 20th, and the morning of July 20th was the last time I saw her. And did not find her body, did not find any sign of her. A very sad time, but thankfully we have come out of a very sad time to a very happy time.
We'll talk about that in just a moment. Do you have any idea what the illness that did in Sarah might have been?
Well, it could have been illness. It could have been injury. It could have been simply old age as well. One of the biggest unanswered questions I have about Charles and that I had about Sarah is their age. They never answer my emails, unfortunately. but she could have just been old. In terms of illness, a West Nile virus is potential. My biggest concern with the owls in Forest Park is cars, because they will fly very high over the roads, but other nights they will fly 2 to 3 feet over the roads. And that definitely makes myself and others concerned for their well-being.
How long would an owl's normal lifespan be?
There's a lot we know about great horned owls. They're the most widespread, commonly found owl in North America, but there's so much we do not know, including good records and indications and other data on average age. Mm-hmm. Sarah was at least 11 to 14, 12 to 15 years of age, because I'd been watching her for over 9 years at that point, and they generally don't start having babies until they're 2 to 3. And she was already having babies the first year that I saw her and Charles.
I'm sure the listeners have noticed that you've given them all names.
Yes.
Tell me about that process.
That process, sometimes there's a happy accident. Sometimes there's just a spark of inspiration. Charles just literally came to my mind one day, and I thought in kind of a post-facto analysis, well, that's a good everyday name, but it also has regal associations. But I also knew that my girlfriend, Wendy Schlegel, who's a connoisseur of the cute, would also enjoy just saying that name and thinking of this owl named Charles.
And Sarah?
Sarah didn't – I didn't have a name for her for a while because I was only seeing her a little, and she was flying in and out of this hollow, and I just didn't have a name. She was just the female, the mysterious, the enigmatic, the female. Mm-hmm. And then in April 2006, I looked in this hollow, and there were two – owlets, two babies, blinking back at me, and I realized, she's been nesting, and that's when I named her Sarah, after my friend Sarah Henry. She and her husband Chad had twins in January of 06, and I thought, twin humans, twin babies, twin owl babies, owlets. Maybe my friend Chad's name is derived from Charles. The universe is telling me I should name the female Sarah, so I named her Sarah. Much to Sarah the Human's delight.
You know, it's very interesting, and reading your blog, which is a very interesting read, by the way, and we'll put on our website means by which people can read it themselves. I was really quite touched by a number of people who responded to her death. I mean, you really got a lot of feedback on that.
Very much so. Comments on my blog, emails, Facebook comments. I mean, I even had a very sweet email from someone the other day, Martha and Joe live in Olivet and are just the sweetest folks around. And they said, well, we haven't seen that you've updated your blog for a while. Are you okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're worried about the owls, but how are you doing? But the impact these owls have had on so many people, not just in the immediate St. Louis area, because I give talks on the owls all over Missouri and Illinois, mm-hmm. just keeps growing and growing and surprising and delighting me.
What do you think it is that about the great horned owl that touches so many people? I mean, most of us haven't even ever seen one.
Indeed. I had a nice moment with two young gentlemen yesterday where I was able to show them Charles. They heard him hoot and they turned their heads and I was able to point him out to them. And one of them said, wow, I've never seen an owl before. And I said, don't feel bad. I didn't see an owl until I was 19. And I've had people well into their 60s and 70s and beyond who have never seen an owl. I think with the great horned owl, they're just a beautiful, fascinating animal. And as you start to teach people about them and people begin to understand how common yet simultaneously how extraordinary these animals are, it just opens up this whole new world to them.
Right. Well, we have a new name to bring into the discussion, and that would be Olivia.
Indeed. Charles has a new mate.
Well, how did this come about? I mean, was Olivia living in the neighborhood or did she come in from some – do we know anything about this romance?
I would love – we know a lot, but there's a lot we don't know. It's very much a good microcosm of great horned owls. Charles spent the fall courting. He courted two females. First one showed up on September 1st and they courted for a few weeks and then she was gone. The next day after the first female was gone, appears female number two. And they courted for several days and then just stopped. And that female disappeared. And it was fascinating to watch courtship because I'd never seen it before. When I first saw Charles and Sarah, they're already a couple.
Well, how do you describe the courtship? What's involved?
The courtship is primarily vocalization. One thing I kept waiting to see but didn't see was anything beyond vocalization. The vocalization is called a duet, literally like two people singing to each other, but in this case, two owls hooting to one another. And I do a lot of research on these owls, and I was really excited to see some of the other courtship behavior, like the two owls clacking their bills at each other, or the two owls grooming, or the male doing acrobatic flights, or the male bringing food to the female to say, hey, look what I can do. I saw none of that, but I did see intensive vocalizations, and I did see with once the third female, now Olivia, arrived right away. The first night she arrived, Charles went to a nest spot, a spot that Sarah used the last 3 years and a year even before that. And I thought, ooh, this might be taking it to another level, that he's saying, not only am I here and I'm a nice, healthy owl and I've got this lovely territory, but check out these potential nest spots.
Is there any way of determining what it might have been that Charles would find unacceptable about the first ladies that visited?
Well, one thing I mentioned on my blog when Sarah passed was that any way you looked at Sarah as a mother, as a hunter, as a defender of her young, A-plus, all-star, Oscar-winning, great horned owl. And I think Charles had the potential of just being, in the best sense of the word, spoiled. That, hey, I've had this most amazing female. No one else is going to come close, or, you know, if they're going to try, they really have to step up their game. You don't go back to the TV dinners after filet.
And are there owlets?
Too early for owlets. They are busy mating. They first mated on December 7th, and I've seen them mate 8 times, including twice last night. It would be too early for owlets, and I don't count my owlets before they hatch. Even with Sarah, Charles and Sarah had 23 owlets in my time watching them and 10 consecutive nesting seasons, but it was never a guarantee, a given, a fait accompli. It was, well, let's just see what happens.
How long do the owlets stay with the parents?
They stay with the parents for an incredibly long time. These owls have the longest breeding cycle of any owl in North America. Last year is a perfect example. Sarah began to nest on December 30th. The owlets hatched around mid-February, and the owlets were there in the parents' territory until the third week of September.
Wow. Yeah. Better part of almost a year.
Almost a year. And then December 7th, Charles is mating again. And that time between the owlets leaving and mating again, it's not, oh, here we are in the hot tub, you know, the children are gone, we're enjoying literally empty nests. No, it's more, oh, whew. Okay, that was our break. Now back to work. We have to reestablish our territory. And now this year, Charles having to court.
And that's what they're doing, reestablishing territory. I mean, it's part of what's going on.
Part of what's going on. Oh, yes, right. Very much so.
Do they push the owlets out of the nest and say, hey, it's time to go off to wherever you're going to wind up going?
Well, it's a two-step process. There's the actual leaving of the nest. That's called fledging. And that happens pretty early on, about 6 to 10 weeks of age. And then once the owlets fledge, they're then dependent on the parents for many months. And then, yes, the parents will encourage them. They will stop feeding them as they get older and say, okay, you're done. We love you, but we're not feeding you anymore. Human parents, feel free to make a note of this. And if that doesn't work, they are known to even chase them out. And we had an owlet in 2014 that would not leave. It should have left in September at the latest, and it finally left on December 26th.
We get the word fledgling, I'm sure, from this whole fledging fledging process. How long does it take before the owlets are capable of hunting by themselves?
That generally happens later in their maturation process, and that is the ability that takes them the longest to learn. They first have to learn how to fly, then they have to learn how to land, and then slowly they build up to hunting. And that's a very gradual process. And they usually start with small things like insects and the like. But that's often 5, 6, 7 months of age. Mm. One of the interesting things with the owlet that wouldn't leave was seeing it hunt successfully but also not quite hunt successfully.
Mm. Well, in our conversations in the past, and for folks who haven't heard them, it's really interesting. I found it very interesting, the ability of the owls, the adults, to hunt. And the capabilities they have, I mean, they can take on some fairly large critters, can't they?
Very much so. I was very impressed just a few nights ago to see the new female, Olivia, go after a great blue heron, a bird twice her size. And that heron was not dismissive of Olivia, quite the contrary. I was alerted that this was happening by hearing the croaking, panicked calls of this great blue heron as it was being chased by Olivia.
Did Olivia finish him off?
She did not finish. She did not catch him. She did not finish him off. But that great blue heron was not taking any chances.
Why, Mark? Why should people care about the owls in Forest Park? Why are they important, or are they important beyond a naturalist's curiosity?
I think they are important for a number of reasons. One of the primary ones is something that really surprised me and hooked me about these owls is that great horned owls are a top of the food chain predator. And I had never heard them mentioned in the same breath as other top of the food chain predators in North America, like black bears, brown bears, mountain lions, American alligators. But they are. What's interesting is while so many of our top food chain predators have been their territories decrease and decrease, it's called extirpation, great horned owls, who have only been federally protected since the 1970s, great horned owls have still flourished. Their populations are quite healthy. I mean, we used to have grizzly bears and wolves in Missouri. We don't have those anymore. Mm-hmm. And then we get problems with controlling the populations of other animals like white-tailed deer. Now, a great horned owl can't do anything about a white-tailed deer, but it does show that top of the food chain predators have a very important role in our ecosystems.
There is one location I know where you take your folks on the owl prowl. But I want to go back to Olivia because I'm sort of curious as to whether or not there is someplace else in the park that where she might have been until Sarah died and somehow she and Charles got together. I mean, you know, it's not like she just came in off the street. Or maybe that's kind of what she did.
There's both possibilities are possible. Yeah. The interesting thing about all owls is that there is a large population of what's called floaters. That's what single owls are called. And there's a lot we don't know about floaters, but we have learned some more about them, including that, well, they can exist within the territory or range of an owl that has a territory. But if they keep a low profile, they can do that. And then if you have something like this where one dies, you already have an option right there literally in your backyard. So it's possible that she had been in Forest Park for some time. It is also very possible that, as you phrased it, she came in off the street.
Could it have happened from a great distance? I mean, is there some way they have to communicate that she might have known from a distance that this was going on with Charles and Sarah?
Not so much, oh, hey, I'm in Quincy, Illinois, or station saying, oh, I hear there's an opening for a female in Forest Park. But, oh, hey, I hatched 50 to 80 miles away from here, and she might be a young owl. There's a very strong possibility that she's a first or second, maybe third year owl, and that she's just trying to find her territory, her mate, and she hears Charles calling and Sarah not responding, and no female responding. And she says, well, there's a job opening. Let me see how it goes.
Do you have any sense, I mean, we've talked about this before too, I'm sure, as to how many owls there would be in Forest Park? I mean,
probably about, in great horned owls, there are four Charles and Olivia and another pair in another section of the park. And then we've got about 2 to 3 pairs of barred owls.
Right.
So about 6 to 8, 8 to 12 owls.
But the owlets that were sired by Sarah and Charles, they didn't hang around. I mean, they're great horned owls.
They are great horned owls, but they're not going to – the parents aren't going to let them stick around that close. It's quite possible that some of their youngsters disperse 2 to 3 miles away, but usually dispersal distances for great horned owls range between about 50 to 100 miles.
Wow, that's quite some range.
Yes, and it's really the only time in their life cycle that they go any great distance. They are one word that I always tell people, that, hey, when we're talking about great horned owls, notice we haven't said the M word. We haven't said migration. They really don't migrate once they've established a territory.
Another curiosity to me is why any of them would choose Forest Park. There is a lot of foot traffic. There's a lot of automobile traffic. It is relatively confined. It can be noisy. There's a lot going on. You would think that they would want someplace that would be more secluded.
Well, this points to one of the amazing qualities of great horned owls, how adaptable they are, not just to different ecosystems, but to different conditions within an ecosystem. Basically, all great horned owls need is a decent stand of timbered woods, where they can nest and perch, and then open areas to hunt. And Forest Park is perfect. And when I travel to give talks, be it by car or if I'm traveling to visit family by plane, one thing I do as I look over the landscape is look and say, yes, that square there, that would be a good great horned owl territory. And one of the things about great horned owls is once you start paying attention to them and looking for them, you start finding them all over the place.
And yet they are, unless you're looking for them and know what you're looking for, they are hard to spot. I mean, they blend in very nicely with their habitat.
Very much so. After 10 years, I'm better at finding them, but they still fool me more than I would care to admit. The other day I walked right past Olivia. I literally walked past her twice and did not see her in this tree.
What if you say they do have federal protection. What is the penalty if you bring harm to one of these birds?
It depends on the level of harm, but just to show how tight the restrictions are when it comes to birds of prey, one cannot possess any part of a bird of prey without the proper federal or state permits. I mean, you find a feather on the ground, you can't take that home unless you have those permits. So just to extrapolate from that, if you actually did harm, yes, the penalties would be quite severe.
And therefore they are thriving. You say that the great horned owl is doing okay.
Doing very well. The IUCN status, the International Union of the Conservation of Nature, the largest global body that looks at species, populations, and health thereof, their status is the healthiest one, species of least concern.
Well, I know that makes you happy. We have a tweet here from Amy, I guess it is. Amy Dunn says she's excited that Charles has a new mate. She says, woot, woot, or should I say hoot, hoot. For people like Amy who would like to learn a little bit more about it, to tell us about the – we only have a little over a minute left. Tell us about the owl prowls and how people can get involved and have you take them to the habitat and talk as we're talking here.
Certainly. I lead owl prowls all the time. I'm going to finish 2015 with 70 owl prowls.
Wow.
So when I say all the time, that's not hyperbole. It's very easy. If you go to my website, forestparkowls.blogspot.com, you'll find my email address there. Just email me 2 to 3, maybe 2 to 4 dates that work for you. I'll look at my calendar. We'll set a date. We'll set a time. I'll send you a very detailed list of where to meet, when to meet, and how to dress, what to bring, and what not to bring.
We will put that link, a link to your website on our website at seopublicradio.org. And in the 30 seconds we have left, what happens on an owl prowl?
An owl prowl, we learn about great horned owls in general, but we also learn about Charles and Sarah, now Charles and Olivia in particular, relating general facts to individual facts. We look for the owls, observe the owls. We see them 99.9% of the time. And go from there. And some nights are more intense than others. Some are kind of a regular night, but it's always a great time.
Right. Well, again, we'll have that information on our website. I thought owls were awake at night and slept during the day.
Yes, they are. Oh, yeah. Oh. We meet about an hour before sunset.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like a lot of fun. And once again, I'm gonna threaten you once again with showing up one night myself because I'd love to do this.
I'd love to have you.
Well, thank you so much, Mark Lenshaw. Great to see you again. And good luck with Charles and Olivia.
Thanks,
Does Charles recognize you by now?
I think at most there's an element of recognition, not like, oh, hey, Mark, how's it going? But like, okay, there's that guy.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with St. Louis Public Radio News editor Margie Freivogel on the last day of her 4-decade career in journalism. We'll also revisit a discussion about the Missouri History Museum's exhibit on coffee. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/STL on air. This is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.